If a leaky faucet is the worst of your problems as a tenant, you'll consider yourself very lucky after you've read the latest Village Voice list of New York's 10 worst landlords. Ward Harkavy, a senior editor for The Voice, and staff writer Elizabeth Dwoskin spent months sifting through public records of lawsuits and code violations to determine which 10 landlords you'd least want to be renting from. Along the way, they interviewed hundreds of tenants, attorneys, and landlords to narrow the field down to the worst of the worst. The first five were published in last week's issue of The Voice, and the last five can be found in today's issue. I'm very pleased to welcome Ward Harkavy to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I said you've been looking at them for a year. How long actually did it take to compile this list?
Well, all the street work was conducted by Liza Dwoskin. I did none of that, so she has seen hundreds and hundreds of really bad places, and she's interviewed equally gloomy tenants several months, and she has also written other housing stories, plus The Voice has a history of looking at housing and landlords, so she drew on that as well.
That goes back to Jack Newfield in the '60s. He created the 10 worst landlords.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And we have done it since then with a variety of people, including the late J. A. Lobia, and several other people on our staff.
It's not been continuous, has it?
It has not been. It's not a yearly project. But there are enough landlords. We could do 1,000 a year and not run out.
Yeah, you said that. You said that she looked at hundreds of bad places, so that means there must be many candidates. So how do you determine who are the worst of the worst?
Well, it's hard to get your hands around it in a place where you have millions of people living in apartments. New York City, you know, two-thirds of New Yorkers, live in apartments compared with a third of Americans elsewhere.
But I imagine that every city has a 10 worst landlords or 100 worst landlords.
Yes, but we have probably 100,000 of them. So how do you pick them? It's difficult to pick them. You can't go strictly by violations. You can't go by the number of rats found in glue traps or the size of the holes in the ceilings. You have to do it in other ways. And, of course, it's always a little subjective, but I think the way we put it is these are the 10 we would want to rent from the least.
Are the top 10, or should I say the bottom 10, presented in any particular order?
No, they are not. And the stories are diverse. If you see it, and you can still see it on villagevoice.com, that's a plug for our website, shameless. But if you
look... Okay.
If you look, you'll notice that the landlords are a varied group. We have a landlord who has one building and is an angry person. It freaks the tenants out that way.
He doesn't let them go to the bathroom.
Yes. And we have a landlord. We have landlords who are, they're just investors flying in from outside seeking to evict tenants so they can raise the rents and so on. So we have that type. Then we have landlords who have owned buildings here for years and years. And, then we have one landlord who, literally abandoned the buildings, when the real estate market fell. So we have a variety of them.
In your opinion, is there one landlord on the list who stands out as the absolute worst? If so, what sets him apart? And I can't say him, because all of the 10 worst landlords are men.
Well,
although I'm assuming some of them are married and they share the responsibility.
Yeah, I don't know if it worked out that way intentionally. I would say no. And I would not want to name the absolute worst, because who knows, I might be renting from him someday. there's no way to say that one is the worst, because as I say, the situations are all different.
Well, there's some that have to have been totally disgusting.
Well, I think, there's one landlord on the list whom Andy Cuomo went after quite directly and said that, that landlord was violating the law. And that's great. I think it's great when you see the AG of the state do that. On the other hand, that's all complicated, because when Andy Cuomo was the HUD secretary, We had a huge housing scandal in the city, the 203K program, and that happened under his watch. So, you know, landlords and rent, it's a continual political football kicked around.
Well, what would be a really disgusting situation as opposed to a really dangerous situation? I'm sure you've seen both.
Well, I think the dangerous situations are the ones in which the tenants report severe damage and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And now, it's one thing to be the landlord of an old building that's falling down and you may be late with repairs, but if you don't do anything at all about it and the city is forced to come in to do emergency repairs, that is a bad landlord.
Well, how much power does the city have? Can't they, in some of these cases, these landlords also haven't paid their taxes in many years. Can't the city just come in and take over those buildings?
Well, the city can do that, but the problem is that look at the scope of it in New York City. I mean, everything is big in New York City. We have more landlords than any other place in the country. You can't have a bureaucracy large enough to deal with that. I'm not familiar with the actual dealings with the city agencies. That's all Liza Dwoskin, and she did an outstanding job of doing all the tracking down of this. But it's a difficult problem for the city. I have to say, I'm not usually sympathetic to the city bureaucracy, but in this case, I have to be a little bit.
My guest is Ward Harkavy, who is the co-author of New York's 10 Worst Landlords in the Village Voice last week and this week. I would assume that...
Well, I'm not the co-author. That's all Liza Dwoskin's credit. I just edited the story.
Okay.
Yeah.
I assume that some of these things get underreported because many of these buildings, the tenants are not the sort of people who might want to call the cops or call the housing authority.
Well, and even when they do call, they can't get anything done unless they organize. And in a couple of cases, we have in many cases, and we mentioned one of them, I believe, in which the tenants get threatened if they do organize or if they do complain. And then, of course, some of the advocates for tenants, they have it tough too. So,
are all of these buildings in places where the rents are very low?
Not particularly. Most of the buildings on the list are probably pretty shabby, shop-worn buildings, but not all the tenants are poor. But if you're going to look at the egregious examples of bad landlording, if that's a term, then I think if you're looking at the worst of the worst, then you're looking at places that are very dangerous to live in, and those are usually people who are poor and powerless.
And probably can't afford to move.
Well, they can't afford to move because some of the shocking numbers that aren't in this series, but just for context, it's really astounding that in New York City, according to the city, more than a quarter of the rental households pay more than 50% of their household income in gross rent. So if you're paying more than 50%, and the government considers the limit should be 30%, if you're paying more than 50%, what option do you have? You can't save enough money to move.
Used to be a 1 week's pay.
Yeah.
So that would be 25%.
Yeah, yeah.
Were the bad landlords concentrated in any one borough of the city or any one area?
Well, we didn't try to limit it that way when we were figuring out our list. And of course, we had many more on our list, and we kind of winnowed them down. But we didn't do it geographically. So we do have a concentration of buildings in the Bronx, for instance, the Bronx and Queens. But we didn't try to sort it that way by borough.
It's mostly lower rent or rent stabilized buildings.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many rent stabilized, that it's impossible to, miss those. I mean, we have a million people living in those.
Well, some of these guys own a lot of different buildings. One of the 10 worst is a man named Neil Rubler, whose company Vantage Properties owns apartments in around 130 buildings around the city. Does he concentrate in any area?
I don't believe he does, but don't hold me by that because we went through so many landlords that, you know, I can't say for sure without looking at the story. But yes, there are a couple of landlords, at least a couple of landlords on the list who own many, many properties.
He refuses to cash tenants' rent checks sometimes. Why?
Well, this is a strategy that many landlords undertake where I don't know if I would say many, but it's a fairly common strategy of refusing to cash the checks and then accusing the tenants of not paying their rent.
Is that legal?
No, it's not legal at all. But, of course, that way, if you can cow the tenants, especially if they're poor, if they're immigrants, if they really have no recourse and you feel that they don't have any recourse, then you can force them out that way. And, of course, it's not legal.
Some of the landlords you profile just don't take care of their buildings, like Moshe Indig, who owns 684 Flushing Avenue in Brooklyn. What were some of the worst violations that Liz came upon there?
Well, I think if you look at it, you'll see it's kind of self-explanatory that the, you know, it's interesting about Indig, though, that he was one of the few landlords who actually fessed up and said that he the kind of surprising statement that he wanted to make the best landlords list next year.
Well, he's a rabbi in the Hasidic community,
yes.
And I would assume that he has some strong sense of moral obligation toward his tenants.
Well, yes, I think that's probably true, but I think in almost every in so many housing scandals in New York City, we've had religious people involved of all different faiths. So I don't think that makes them immune from, you know, taking advantage of their tenants.
Well, his building is reported to be overrun with pests like mice, bed bugs. Are bed bugs the responsibility of a landlord?
Well, if the building is, let's say that the building has extensive mold. Let's say the landlord hasn't patched the ceilings or the water pipes burst. The landlord is responsible for that, for the conditions that lead to infestations of mice, rats, bed bugs. I don't know what the law is, whether there's an anti-bed bug law that puts responsibility on it, but I think it's the overall condition of the buildings that lead to this.
Well, he said he'd like to make the 10 best list, but what reasons does he give for not fixing the many problems in his building?
Well, I don't think any of the landlords really give reasons, but his seems to make some sense if it is true that the people managing the buildings for him, that they had family problems and there was neglect on that level, but who knows?
And he owes the city a lot of money, doesn't he?
Yes, many of the landlords do, and they, you know, they wind up having kind of a running open account where the city has to step in and make emergency repairs, and then the city has to, you know, the city has to hassle them, you know, to repay the money.
So. People are calling in and writing in with their own landlord problems. So Richard on the Upper West Side asks if the list includes Stanley Katz, who handed his tenants over to a level 3 sex offender and then let him shake down his tenants for sex.
I'm not aware of that one.
Hmm.
I'm not aware of that one. I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't many, many, many stories like this coming in, as many stories as there are rats in the slums.
So if somebody has a story like that, is there a way they can get through to you and Liz so that they can make the list next year?
Absolutely. They can contact Elizabeth Dwoskin directly at edwoskin@villagevoice.com.
That's D-W-O-S-K-I-N.
Yes. Yeah.
You mentioned the landlord who's just plain mean, Humphrey Stevenson, who owns a former mansion in Harlem. Is he doing anything illegal?
It's hard to say whether he is or not. I think it's impossible to say, and he's not been accused of, he hasn't been, you know, hauled into court for this. At least there's nothing illegal about acting like a jerk. Otherwise, everybody in New York would be arrested But
Wait a minute.
Well, except for
almost
you, Leonard.
Everyone.
Sorry. No, he probably isn't. Certainly not violating the array of laws that landlords have to run their buildings under.
Well, you report that he would lock the bathroom after certain hours, so I guess these people don't have individual bathrooms. But I would think that that goes beyond cruelty.
Yes, it probably does, and maybe it's a violation of the law, but who is... realistically, who will take care of that?
And were you able to talk to him and find out why he does these things?
Yes, Elizabeth talked with Stevenson, and he denied that he was angry. And he said, "Well, they don't flush, they don't take care of the bathroom," and so yes, he did have his reasons. At least he told us he had his reasons.
Do most of them try to justify what they've done?
Many of the landlords wouldn't talk with us. And, you know, I don't think that that's uncommon because perhaps from their perspective, they have nothing to gain by talking with the press.
Well, what is the history of the Voice and the 10 Worst Landlords? What effect has it had on the quality of landlords in the city? In the past, have landlords who've been reported try to improve their images? Have they law enforcement paid attention to the series over the years?
It's hard to quantify that. I don't know how to quantify that. I'm certain that it's had an effect on the policymakers. There's no doubt about that. And it's raised consciousness among people. Now, how long that lasts, I don't know. It's interesting to read a list. The question is whether there's anything long-lasting in this. And that's always the problem when you do a series like this, no matter what kind of paper you work on.
Well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the readers go over the list and say, oh, gee, I'll never rent from that guy. But they're unlikely to anyway. I'm not sure how many Village Voice readers would be in this situation.
Some of them would be, but you're absolutely right that they wouldn't. The question is, how do people keep this in the front part of their consciousness? The only thing we can do is to present it in a way that will, you know, that we hope people will read and will refer back to, and that maybe people will stay angry about it, as they should be.
Do you get a lot of mail in response to the series?
Well, mail, that's a strange term these days with newspapers.
Email
comments. We have gotten quite a few comments. Once again, it's hard to tell what people – I think the people who read this, of course, would have the reaction that this is outrageous. I think it's an interesting package, and it's readable. So people should read it. Whether that stays in their minds for long, who knows? I can't judge that.
Well, you talk about your father immigrating to the United States as a child and growing up in the Lower East Side in a tenement mm-hmm. in the 20s. And we associate – the tenements of the past with these kinds of conditions. But we talk about them as something that is very much of the past.
Yes, and we also kind of romanticize it, or it's a little bit nostalgic, like in The Godfather when the young Vito Corleone is on the streets and it's all those nice mauve and sepia tones, when actually it's not like that at all. I think there probably were slumlords back then, just as there are slumlords now.
I think the big difference is people expected to be treated poorly by the landlord, don't you think?
Yeah, but listen, we have plenty of immigrants in the city now. It's a city of immigrants, and I think that people could maybe learn from that this is a city of immigrants. If the people around town who would never rent from such landlords say, oh, well, that doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, yes, it does, because maybe their parents, their grandparents came over and had to face the same problems.
Although there is a big difference. Those people came through Ellis Island, and I'm sure that many of the people who don't report these landlords are undocumented and are afraid that that by complaining they'll call attention to themselves, and I suspect the landlords take advantage of that.
They probably do, although I'm not really sure if it's possible to quantify how many of them are undocumented, but yes, if you're talking about immigrants are always, no matter what era, immigrants are always at the mercy of the system.
I have looked at the series over the years, and I think that my overall feeling is, how can people be so mean, so cruel, so insensitive? You wonder what they're thinking when they...
Money and land.
Yeah, but if you fix up a building, can't you make a lot more money? Isn't that what gentrification... I mean, I know gentrification has its downside, but gentrification's justification is that you take a place that's really run down, you fix it up, you can charge a bit more.
Yes, you can charge more, perhaps, but maybe you have to get rid of the tenants you have in there now. And so, and some of the landlord stories we have are stories of not so much of the damage or the rats or the holes in the ceilings and walls, but stories of how landlords are trying to evict tenants so that they can do that, so that they can fix up the buildings and sell them to people who will pay the market rate.
Harassment is one of the things that rates high in the 10 worst landlords.
Yes, it does, and especially when it seems purposeful or when it's organized. I mean, of course, we have random landlords who might be mean, but when there's a pattern of it, that's pretty bad.
Can we talk a bit about the Village Voice?
Sure.
Because, you know, it used to be one of the must-reads in the city. I don't know if it is anymore. When I was young, you paid for it and you had to read it. Now it's free, and I'm not sure you have to read it anymore.
Well,
you're trying to make it relevant, but you know what I mean.
Yes, and I think it's a problem that all the print media face. I've worked on daily papers around the country and on alternative weeklies or so-called alternative weeklies, and I can't answer that question. I mean, to me, it doesn't make any difference whether the paper is free or not. The Voice has a unique place in the history of New York, especially in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. All newspapers are facing competition. And we're all trying to move toward providing more on our websites, and we're faced with declining readership. All of us are. If you look at every paper, the Times and Wall Street Journal included, they've shrunk in sizes. We have. They shrunk in number of pages. So it's an industry-wide problem. I don't know how much of it is the Voices in particular, but it's a tough world out there for newspapers of all types.
Well, one of the biggest problems is shrinking advertising dollars. And the Voice used to be thick with advertising.
Well, the voice was fortunate. The Voice had a huge number of classified ads, and most newspapers have suffered because the classified ads have all gone onto the web, and you can advertise for free on Craigslist. So why would you buy a classified?
Ward Harkavy is a senior editor at the Village Voice, and he edited the latest New York's 10 Worst Landlords, written by staff writer Elizabeth Dwoskin. The first five were in last week's issue. The final five are in the issue that's being released today. I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you very much, Leonard. Appreciate it.